Worldview Radio and WVW-TV is made possible because of listeners like you. Thank you so much for your tax-deductible contribution that you can make at WVWFoundation.com. That's WVWFoundation.com or by calling 901-825-0652. That's 901-825-0652. You can also send your tax-deductible contribution via check to WVW Foundation, P.O. Box 1690, Collierville, Tennessee 38027. That's again, WVW Foundation, P.O. Box 1690, Collierville, Tennessee 38027. Thank you for helping make possible Worldview Radio and WVW-TV broadcasts.
Brennan House Live. Whether the issue is law, science, economics, history, family, social issues, education, religion, government, or national security, Brennan brings the issues of the day into clear focus through the lens of a Judeo-Christian worldview. And now, here is your host, Brennan House.
Good evening. Welcome to the program. Joining me tonight on the show is going to be Miss Darby, Mrs. Darby's husband. Sadly, he's in a predicament. We've talked about him, a police officer that was trying to do the right thing, followed his training, followed what he was told to do, and he's sitting in jail tonight. We're going to get an update from her. And then we're going to be joined by Trevor Loudon. Today, Mikhail Gorbachev died. I believe he was 91. I said, hey, Logan, Mikhail Gorbachev died today. Logan, how old are you, Logan? 19? Logan's response was, who? I'm like, yeah, I'm an old guy. So then I asked another young college student that works for us, hey, Caleb, Mikhail Gorbachev died today. He looked at me, he said, who? Both of them had the same response. I'm like, what are they teaching you in school? You guys don't know who Mikhail Gorbachev was? Well, Mikhail Gorbachev, do you want to know the real worldview of Mikhail Gorbachev? We'll go to Trevor Loudon. He'll give us an update on the life of the former USSR leader, the last USSR leader, Mikhail Gorbachev. Then General Michael Flynn called me this morning. When he calls, I answer. He said, I think I need to give your audience a report on some things going on. And I said, absolutely, General. So General Michael Flynn will join us. And then, if time allows, a quick interview that I did earlier today, pre-taped with John Whitehead. Want to have time for that? If not, I'll bring it to you tomorrow night. Got more news that we can cram in. Annie Cyrus is going to be with us tonight, but she asked if she could move her report till tomorrow night. So we look forward to doing that. All right, joining me first is Mrs. Darby. Welcome back to Brennan House Live. I wanted to get you back on and do a follow-up on your husband. It's a tragic story. Welcome back. I hope you're holding up.
Yes, Brandon, thank you for having me on.
No, you're welcome. You're here anytime. For those who maybe don't remember, can you give our audience an update, you know, kind of maybe just a quick overview to remind other folks and then those who may be against? We're adding all the time. I just found that today we got picked up on a station in Las Vegas, in Los Angeles. So we're always adding new folks. So refresh the memory of some and then tell some for the first time your tragic story that we want to try to help you with.
So my husband is Ben Darby. He was a Huntsville police officer. We're both police officers, actually. And in 2016, we started our careers at separate departments. In 2018, Ben was on duty for Huntsville Police Department and answered a call for service involving a suicide by cop situation. He got there as the third officer on scene, and nationwide, we're taught to have the person exit the house if they have a gun, not to go in the house with them if they're alone. And that's exactly the opposite of what the two original officers did. So when Ben got there, he didn't see a perimeter set like he was trained and how he had answered several calls in the past to do. He gets up to the house and sees one of his officers in the direct line of fire of Mr. Parker, who had a gun to his head. After giving Mr. Parker 7 commands to drop the weapon, Mr. Parker made a furtive movement towards my husband and the other two officers in the room, and Ben executed that threat and stopped the threat from them dying that day or getting shot. 4 months later, he was indicted by a grand jury after the investigator found no probable cause to arrest him for murder. 2 weeks after the incident, he was cleared by an incident review board that included the district attorney, Huntsville Police Department personnel, city legal, and other people, citizens in the community. We didn't have a trial until May of 2021, where a jury ultimately found him guilty, largely in part because they were not told all the evidence and all the case law that supports my husband. And he's been sitting in prison for over a year now. August 20th, 2021, he was sentenced to 25 years for following the training as given to him by the state of Alabama and national training standard across the nation.
Well, then if someone wants to go to jail for this, they ought to throw the people in jail that were charged with that training.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to APOST, which is our police commission, our training commission, and I talked to them personally and asked, you know, we're still teaching 13A.323 and 13A.327, which are criminal statutes for defense of a police officer and the general public against someone with a weapon. And the chief secretary said, yes, we're still teaching that in the 10 academies in the state of Alabama. I said, then if we're still teaching that and that's correct, why is my husband in prison? Because yeah. He was taught the exact same thing. And now he's sitting there for doing exactly as he was taught.
And I was being facetious because I don't want to see the people that are doing the training or approve the training or endorse the training go to jail, because I think it's the proper training for saving the lives of officers. So I was being facetious when I said that. But again, to think that your husband, who followed the training, is now going to be sent to prison for following his training. Again, well, why would you not keep going up the line and start indicting everybody else that did that training? Because if they're the ones that taught them to do that, would they not be an accessory to murder? I'm not an attorney. I don't even know if I'm using the right phrases, but it seems to me a common sense guy from the street says, well, if this is the one that told you and taught you how to do this, and that's a crime, then everyone that was involved in this from the officer on up should also be charged. But of course, that would only if you're being consistent. But number two, no one should be charged because they have the right to self-defense and the defense of their coworkers, their fellow police officers
right.
that are in the room. I don't know if there was any body cameras in the room on those officers that night or not. Was there?
There was. There is body cameras on all three officers.
Did the jury see that?
The jury did see it. They didn't see all of the video. They saw cuts of the video as deemed by the prosecutors. So they didn't see the whole thing. They didn't hear all the facts. They didn't hear relevant testimony, including a training instructor at the police academy who taught action versus reaction, in that if a bad guy has a gun and it's whether it's pointed at you or not pointed at you as an officer, they are going to react. They are going to act faster and shoot you before the officer can realize that and react to that threat.
That's right. And you even did a demo of that for us last time. I asked you how fast, and you showed, and you're like, boom, you're dead. And I was like, whoa, that's fast. I mean, yes.
Yeah, it's very
he
quick.
Knows.
It's very quick.
You were saying he knows when he's going to do the move. The officers don't know. So he has the advantage because he
right.
knows when he's going to react.
Exactly. I know if this is my gun, I know when I'm going to turn it on you or anyone else that's standing in front of me.
And
you don't know when
show
you're
us how fast
do,
it is.
When you're
show,
do it.
Show us again.
You tell me when I'm going to shoot you.
Go. Wow.
There's
so
a little
before
bit of delay,
I could even,
but
before
I
could
you.
Even finish saying the word go, you'd already shot.
Right. And Mr. Parker did make that furtive movement that day. Ben had told him drop the gun. Parker said, no, I'm not going to do it. Ben said, I'm not going to tell you again, drop the gun. And he went like this. And Ben was able to recognize that quick enough and stop that gun from coming towards him to the other officers and himself to stop that threat.
And yet there have been officers in your state, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think even in your county, that have done the same thing and they were cleared, right?
So in Madison County, where Huntsville is, there were officers who answered a suicide by cop call in 2018, so a year later. And the subject there was complaints that she was shooting her gun from outside her door telling everyone she was going to kill herself and kill everyone there. Huntsville Police Department arrived, knocked on the door, and sought cover outside of the house, asked her to come out of the house. They could see a gun in her waistband. They told her, keep your hands up. Don't reach for the gun. Keep your hands up. She reached for the gun. Before she could get her hand on the gun, she was shot because she was going for the gun, which is a threat towards those officers. Those officers weren't charged. Those officers weren't put through the ringer that we've been gone through. And they shouldn't be because they did exactly as they were trained. Jason Moore, a Huntsville police officer who was shot in the face for not acting fast enough during a domestic call where a guy had two long guns pointed at the ground, that individual was able to flick his wrist and shoot Jason in the face with birdshot before he was able to react. So that same example I had for you, but the guy had the guns pointed to the ground. Thank God he survived that, but Jason became an instructor at Huntsville Police Academy and taught Ben and several academies after Ben's that you can't wait for the gun to be pointed at you. And that is covered in Graham versus Connor, which is Supreme Court case law that backs police officers on how to use force and how to reasonably use force as a police officer and not as Joe Q Citizen, which is exactly what the prosecutors compared my husband to. Joe Citizen doesn't know and isn't trained the way that police officers are. And you can't compare the two and say they're the same because, quite frankly, they're not.
And, of course, the reason many people in the audience probably are asking why, what's the reason for this? And if I remember correctly, there's some political animosity between the prosecutor and the Huntsville Police Department, correct?
Yes. Yes, that is true. There is animosity there. So when Ben had his incident, he had his interviewed by Major Crimes, and the investigator did not have enough probable cause, which is what you need to make an arrest, to arrest Ben for murder, and didn't arrest him. And so the investigator completed his report and submitted it. The district attorney got a hold of it, didn't like what he saw, called the police chief and said, if you fire him, we won't charge him with murder. And Chief McMurray said, he didn't do anything wrong. I'm not going to fire him. And so they went back and forth. And then August of 2018, the district attorney's office convened a grand jury and sought an indictment and secured an indictment of murder against my husband, which a grand jury indictment is not hard to get. It's very, very simple to get.
You remember the old saying, you could indict a ham sandwich?
Exactly. That's exactly what they did.
Okay, so the last time you were with us, I think we urge people to call your attorney general. I think if I remember correctly, I've interviewed hundreds of people since you, but your story, I have not gone back and watched our interview. I have not looked at any notes. I'm just recalling all this because your story stuck with me that much. And if I remember, because it's such a miscarriage of justice, but if I remember correctly, you ran in to the attorney general of your state at somewhere. And I think we asked folks to call politely call the attorney general and ask him to do something about this, correct?
Yes, and I've gotten feedback that people have called. So to your viewers, thank you for doing that, for contacting his office and also contacting the Alabama Criminal Appeals Court. We have gotten feedback that people are calling them and asking them why Ben is in prison and why this miscarriage of justice was allowed to be committed against him. So thank you guys for that.
So they need to continue making those calls, but do it politely.
Yes. Yes, I would encourage that.
Have we made any progress since we last interviewed you?
We have, actually. I found out just yesterday, so this is a great time for the interview for today. So when you make an appeal, you submit for oral arguments, and oral arguments is a time for the judges, the prosecution, and the defense to have an hour total, so 30 minutes per side, to discuss appealable issues within the case. Everyone who goes to an appeal court has that option, and they try to get those oral arguments, but that's something that only 10% of all appeals get granted. So to get oral arguments is a very big deal. And I was told yesterday at around 3:30 that we were given oral arguments. So we will be having a hearing in Birmingham on November 10th. At Samford University. I don't have the time yet, but it is open to the public, first come, first serve basis.
How many will it seat? Any idea how many it will seat?
I have no idea. I know it's at the Cumberland School of Law for Sanford. I'm assuming it's in a big auditorium, but I've not been there, and I'm still getting details from our legal team about that. But I will be there. Ben's family will be there. Several of the people supporting him locally will be there.
And this is November
10th.
Okay.
Like I said, I don't have the time yet, but if people follow our Stand With Darby accounts on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, as well as the Pipe Hitter Foundation social media accounts, we will have that posted on there. So if people would like to come and show support for Ben, they can do so. It's only going to be an hour long. So I know for some people that's a drive, but to have a big show of support for Ben would just be a great thing. He won't be there. He's not allowed to be there, but you can guarantee that his family and I will definitely be there.
So what will be decided? What can be decided?
So the courts want to know why his Sixth Amendment constitutional violation of his rights, why was the trial closed to the public? They want more information on that. So they're going to discuss that point, and then they're also going to discuss why the jury was not properly instructed regarding case law and the objective reasonableness that police officers have when they are looked at for use of force. So when we went to trial, again, I wasn't allowed to go. No one was allowed to go and show their support for Ben.
Wait a minute. You weren't even allowed in the courtroom during the trial?
No. Nope. So when he had his trial, they had a hearing the week before trial, and the chief prosecutor had told the judge, he said that he felt there was a he had a great issue. I can't think of the exact wording with having it open to the public and for having uniformed police officers in there to support Ben, because it would taint the jury.
Right.
I mean, I don't know why you can't show support for someone, whether they're in uniform or not.
Exactly.
But they didn't want the jury. They didn't want the jury to be led a certain way, which that's his opinion. I don't think that would have happened anyway. But the judge said, yeah, if that's fine, we'll just cut it. We'll just cut the trial and we'll be open to the public.
So this decision on November 10th, can they then call for a new trial?
So they're going to discuss these two issues. And then after they hear each side, like I said, it's only 30 minutes per side, so it's going to be very quick. After they hear that, they're going to take some time and discuss that discussion, I guess, and then make a decision as to whether he will what his next step is. If we're going to get a retrial, if they're just going to completely finish it and say, no, he did everything he was supposed to do, and you know, call it a mistrial because of all the issues that happened at court. There's several different options that can happen. So this meeting will look at several appealable issues that we have, reason for, and the judges will hear that and then make a decision as to what his next step is in his case.
If they declare a mistrial, can he be released immediately pending the choice of the prosecutor to try it again or not?
I believe so. I believe it's up to the judges. So if they give him a bond or not, you know, and then whatever that bond amount is, we're going to have to pay to get him out. So there's a lot of things. I have a list of questions. I'm meeting with our lawyers soon to go over all this stuff. I'm sure we'll meet several times before November just to have questions answered and figure out what all is going to happen on that day.
So you won't find anything out on that date, the 10th of November, will you? Or will he make a decision that day?
I don't think I'll find anything out on that day. I'm hopeful that we'll hear something within that month, but as of right now, I don't think I'll hear anything on that day, but I will be down there and I'll go live on our accounts, giving people updates as to
what happened. So can we have you on that night?
Can we
have you on that night of the 10th for an update?
Sure.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Let's get that booked now.
Absolutely.
But I also would like to get you on about 2 weeks before this, just so we can really get the word out. Cause we have a lot of viewers in Alabama, and I'd love to see a lot of our folks show up. I mean, I think it's important Is it one judge or multiple judges?
There's five judges.
I think it's very important for them to see the public is very concerned about this case, don't you?
Yes, absolutely.
All right,
yeah, that
so
would be great. The more,
let's do that.
The more, the better.
About 2 weeks before that.
Okay.
Let's reschedule an interview for 2 weeks before, unless something comes up before that, and really spend about 2 weeks getting the word out. Then we can talk tonight the 10th. In the meantime, we're going to ask everybody to pray for this situation coming up on the 10th of November. And I want you to promote your website again, please.
Yeah, so our website is standwithdarby.com. It's all one word. It has everything you want to know about Ben's case, about Ben. I have documents on there supporting why his defense of he is innocent and he did everything as he was trained to do, why he should have been exonerated. People can go there. There's also some donation links on there if people feel led, which several of your viewers have gone through and made comments when they made a donation. So to your viewers, thank you very much. That has been very helpful with our legal fees. And then people can also go to pipehitterfoundation.org, and that's the with Eddie and Andrea Gallagher and mm-hmm. their foundation. They support us, which is a very big deal due to Eddie being in a similar situation with being in prison for the wrong reason.
Former SEAL team member.
Yes, yes.
Standwithdarby.com.
Yes.
And your first name, correct me if I'm wrong, is Keelan, right?
Keelan.
That's why I was calling you Mrs. Darby, because I was afraid to miss. I was afraid I was going to not pronounce it correctly, and I would not have. All right.
That's okay. I get it all the time, but I just go with it.
Well, I usually am Brandon with a D, and but it's
right.
Brandon.
Brandon.
I go with it too. I hardly ever correct anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, there's worse things they can call me, right? So,
right.
All right, we're going to ask everybody to pray for you and to pray for your continued safety, because you're also a police officer.
I am. Yeah, I work night shift patrol for a department in North Alabama. So
yeah.
I'm off tonight. Thankfully, I'll go back to work Thursday night.
All right, we're going to be praying for you, praying for the 10th, praying for your husband as well. And we'll talk about 2 weeks before the November 10th day, unless we need to talk before that. And really just remind everybody to push. Get it all over social media, November 10th, show up, let the court know, let the judges know that this is of great concern to the public, and we'll hope folks will go and support your cause and help with all these attorney fees. And if there's anything else you need between now and then, don't hesitate to reach out to us.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for your support. It means a great deal to us. Ben knows that I'm talking to you tonight, and he said to say thank you as well.
Well, you tell him thank you. We're looking forward to having him on the show as well. When he's out, he's free, and this is all behind him. We're looking forward to having him on as a guest. Both of you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Wow. Thank you. Folks, check out that website, standwithdarby.com. That one is burned in my memory. Like I said, I didn't go back and watch the interview. I didn't read any notes. I just remembered the story, because how can you not? How can you not remember this? So when one of the folks that works with her reached out to me and said, you want an update? I said, absolutely, we want an update. Because we promised you an update, and we're going to continue doing an update. But I hope a lot of you will put November 10th on your calendar and go to standwithdarby.com. They're going to be putting up the information, the time, where, and so the public can show their support.
Hello, I'm Brandon House, and I cannot stress enough how important it is that you go to mypillow.com and use the promo code WVW, as in Worldview Weekend. Not only will you save up to 66%, on sheets, towels, blankets, dog beds, pet beds, bathrobes, slippers, moccasins, and any of the 110-plus products. Not only will you save up to 66% on your purchase by using the very powerful promo code WVW, but did you know that with each purchase, a generous portion comes back to WVW Broadcast Network? Last year in 2021, we were able to replace all of our 12-year-old plus cameras. They were at least 12 years old. They were old HD cameras. We were able to get brand new 4K cameras because you used the promo code WVW. That's how important it is. You may think, well, is it really that important? Yeah, it is. We wouldn't have, I don't think, the brand new cameras we have today if we had not had your support by going to MyPillow.com and using the promo code WVW. Now, not only do we have to buy new equipment, maintain the equipment, but we have bandwidth bill. Every month, we pay thousands of dollars in storage and bandwidth so that you can watch the free TV shows at WVW. If you listen to the radio show for free, I have to pay for the bandwidth. The radio shows and TV shows are free for you to watch, but I have to pay for the bandwidth. How do we cover that bill? One way is by those of you that go to MyPillow.com and you use the promo code WVW, as in World View Weekend, WVW. Will you do that right now? Will you do me another favor? Will you ask your family and friends to go to MyPillow.com? Look, we all need sheets, towels, blankets, comforters, dog beds, bathrobes, slippers, moccasins. You're not only supporting a great company and the work of Mike Lindell, you're also supporting the free radio and TV shows at WVW Broadcast Network. I really need you to go there right now. Please, don't delay. Go right now to MyPillow.com and use the promo code WVW. This is a great way for you to support our work and get something in return. Please, do it right now. MyPillow.com and use the promo code WVW. Thank you.
All right. Joining me now is my buddy Trevor Loudon before we go to General Michael Flynn. Trevor, welcome back to the broadcast. Thanks for joining us, Trevor.
Always a pleasure, Brandon. Always a pleasure. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. Hey, so I told you on the phone, I called you a couple times today to track you down. You're a busy guy. I said, hey, Logan, Miguel Gorbachev died. Who? And then I said to Caleb, another college student, hey, Caleb. He works for us as well. Miguel Gorbachev died. Who? So I said, you know what? We need to get Trevor on, if nothing else, for all the young people who don't know who Miguel Gorbachev is. He's died. He was 91, was he not?
He was, yes. He's had a good inning, so they say.
He had a good inning. Logan, General Flynn's trying to call me on Skype. Do you want to get him? Tell us what we should know. I have not been watching the local or the national media to find out how they're eulogizing him. What is the media saying about Miguel Gorbachev tonight?
That he was the man who brought about the end of communism.
Really? Because I thought that was Ronald Reagan who helped.
Well, and this is the thing. This is all a scam. But what he's credited with doing, he was a general secretary of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, the last one. And he oversaw the so-called demise of communism in the Soviet Union. And then he became an international environmental crusader and a statesman, etc. But there's a couple of things there. I had a friend in New Zealand who went to Moscow to train in the big communist training school, Lenin's Institute for Higher Learning, in 1983. And this is what he said. This was before Gorbachev came on the scene in 85. No one had ever heard of him before 1985. In 1983, they were told at this big school that there was going to be a massive opening to the West. There was going to be a new leader who would bring about the end of communism, that there'll be a new way of doing things. The West would invest lots of money in Russia. The West would disarm. And when that had been completed, the Communist Party would be resurrected and the West would be destroyed. It was a scam. It was supposed to happen under Andropov, and he was the head of the KGB, who was the leader of the Soviet Union a little bit before Gorbachev came on the scene. And he was portrayed in the Western media as this hip, cool, whiskey-drinking, jazz-loving, Soviet leader, a new breed of Soviet leader that the West could deal with. But he died of kidney disease. So they had to put in the old Stalinist Konstantin Chernenko until they could train up Mr. Gorbachev for the role. He was trained for the role, for this pre-planned opening of the Soviet system. The great defector, Anatoly Galitsyn, said very much the same thing in his book, New Lies for Old, which was written in 1984, again before Gorbachev. He was part of the planning, that the long-range planning the Soviets were doing back in the 60s. He was a senior KGB officer, and he said this. He said, there's going to be this massive opening to the West in the mid-1980s. The wall will probably go down. Communism will be de-emphasized. Communism will fall in the Baltic, in the Eastern Bloc. Many of the Soviet Union will turn many of the former countries free, but this will be a ploy, because when the West has disarmed, when the West has given the South Russians tons and tons of money, and when China has built up its army and built up its economy, then Russia and China will join together and smite the United States with one closed fist. I think that's about where we're at right now. And that's because Gorbachev scammed us and we were stupid enough to swallow it.
And Galutsin, being this former high-ranking KGB officer, his book, I think, came out in 84, but I think it was, if I remember correctly, it was even written before that. It was written.
Yeah.
It was written quite a bit before it could finally get published and come out, right?
Yeah. Well, look, he made something like 190 predictions
right.
of what the Soviets were going to do, and something like 180 of them have come true.
Yeah. In fact, people mocked him and thought this is crazy talk. But look at all of his predictions that have come true. But the reason he knew this is because he was part of the inner workings and planning this, correct?
Yeah, there was a sort of Shalepin, the head of the KGB, set up a special inner KGB that would do this long-term strategic planning. And that was not to interact with the outer KGB. So most of the defectors we got from the West, came from the outer KGB. So they didn't really know the long-term strategy. But Galitzin, who was championed by the head of CIA counterintelligence, what was his name? I've forgotten his name. But anyway, James Hazels Angleton, he was championed, and he was from the inner KGB. He said he predicted Gorbachev before there was a Gorbachev. Gorbachev played a role set to him by the KGB to peacefully dissolve communism and dissolve the Iron Curtain, specifically to get the West into a false sense of security. And later on, that would be, we would suffer for that. And I think that's exactly what Putin, who is a neo-communist, a KGB man, is on the verge of doing right now.
Perestroika. I'm sure there's a lot of talk in the media tonight praising him for Perestroika, correct?
Yeah.
Explain to our audience what that means and what it was really
Gorbachev
about.
Gorbachev was known for two words, glasnost and perestroika. Glasnost was openness. It was, you know, free press. It was criticizing politicians in the media. It was people being able to travel. Perestroika was an economic restructuring where they supposedly got rid of the old communist structures, you know, the old state-controlled industries, started to bring back private enterprise. When the Berlin Wall fell, when the Soviet Union fell, perestroika morphed into the mafia capitalism that we have in Russia today. The Russian mafia basically came out of the KGB or formed an alliance with the KGB and took over many of these industries. And the Communist Party of the Soviet Union hid its money within these industries. And now they're in the process of clawing it back for their political purposes.
All right. So tell me, before we go to General Flynn, Logan, let me know when we got Flynn, please, General Flynn. Tell me what you think is coming this fall, because I see where Pope Francis is calling for, I got this on my website tonight over at worldviewreport.com. Pope imposes deadline for Vatican to transfer assets to bank, ABC News. Pope Francis has imposed October 1st deadline for all Holy See offices and Vatican-linked institutions to deposit their assets with the Vatican Bank. I don't know what that's all about, but I do know this Pope and the last Pope have called for a world central bank with teeth. They've called for world government. I don't know if they're preparing for the digital dollar. We have some financial guys like Jim Rickards, who's written New York Times bestsellers, run financial war games with the intelligence community. He has written New York Times bestsellers, as I said, but he came out and said we're going to a digital currency in 2023 or 2024. Now he's moved it up to December of this year. We've got talk of we got PSAs running in New York over nuclear weapons. We have a just-in-time supply crisis. We have a food crisis. It's manufactured They're cracking down on the farmers all over the globe. Our borders are open. We've got over 5 million, they say, afforded since Biden took office. We have numbers known of how many terrorist-tied individuals have made it in, and they don't know where they are. I mean, I could just keep going on and on. They're ratcheting up the talk of conservatives being domestic terrorists. I think Biden's going to be making a speech this week, if I heard correctly, about this. We've got talk of indicting Trump and arresting Trump. We've had the raid on Mar-a-Lago. We've got the FBI. Some of them supposedly that were involved in that raid are dirtied up FBI agents that may have had reason to want to go in there and get some information to cover their rear ends. So we have so much going on. We have the Inflation Reduction Act, which is not going to do that. It's going to increase inflation. So why are they doing this? This is not the behavior of people that are worried about an election coming. Now they're going to cancel the student loan debt of all these people. Forget about the people that took it out and paid it back. We're going to cancel the student loan debt of people as though the people that paid it back were somehow stupid to have paid it back. You know, not to mention those of us who's never taken out a student loan or government loan. Why am I paying that? So this, again, is not the behavior of people that plan to lose an election. They must not be planning to lose an election.
Well, they either they want to control the process, win or lose, you know. So they're putting so many things in place right now that an incoming Republican government, you know, is just going to be inundated. You know, the U.S. dollar could be taken off, lose its world reserve currency status, which will mean massive inflation in this country beyond belief. It'll be a slash in the military budget. We'll put Russia and China even more on the warpath than they are now. I think there'll be an invasion of Taiwan. I think Putin will attack further into Europe. I think we could be in World War III before Christmas. I think we could have a major economic meltdown. All of those things are on the table because, in my opinion, Klaus Schwab, Xi Jinping, Vladimir Putin, and Joe Biden are all working off the same playbook. This is globalism, this is communism, and it'll be achieved through military means, through economic means, through biological means, whatever it takes. The United States must be brought to its knees. That is the goal of all of these players.
Well, one of Putin's guys said in January that the United States must be brought down for the liberal new world order to go forward. His words, not mine.
Yeah, well, exactly. This is the United States is the number one enemy of the globalists, the communists, all of the bad guys. The United States has to be taken down, and I mean properly taken down. So will this happen? They're absolutely planning it. Will America be able to stand strong and fight back? I hope so. The grassroots people can do it, and with God's help, maybe we can do it. But we're in for serious, serious times, and we shouldn't be complacent about what's coming. We've been attacked on every front, and we have to understand this is a coordinated attack to finally finish off the greatest country the world has ever seen, the United States of America.
Yeah, very sobering times. TrevorLoudon.com, TrevorLoudon.com. I knew you were the guy to go to for history, and folks, you just saw why. TrevorLoudon.com, I wanted the history on Gorbachev. He gave it to us. Now, when we post this tonight online at WVWTV.com, FrankSpeech.com, then share it with your young people, college students, because like the college kids that work for us, Mikhail Gorbachev, who's that? Well, now they know. You can share it with your young people as well. Thank you for the history lesson, Trevor.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it, Brandon.
Hey,
just keep on punching out there.
When's the next book coming out?
It's almost finished. I'm working on the last chapter tonight, so okay. I'll let you know about that very soon.
Okay, because you promised me the first interview. We'll bring you in
and do a series
of interviews with you here in studio.
Okay, look forward to
just
it.
Like we did
I'll
with
get
your
back
book,
to it right now.
Just like we did with your book, White House Red.
Yeah.
Which is an this awesome
one's
book.
This one's actually going to be two books because it's so big I've had to make the two parts. But
good.
Yeah, it'll shock a lot of people, I'll tell you.
So we'll probably be seeing you in studio this fall then.
You should, yes.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Looking forward to it. Thank you, Trevor.
Thank you. Thanks, Brandon.
TrevorLoudon.com, folks. TrevorLoudon.com. All right, joining me now is General Michael Flynn. General, as always, welcome back to Brandon House Live. We're so glad you could join us tonight.
Wow. How about Trevor Loudon? Is he amazing? He is a, you know, I just caught the last probably 5 to 10 minutes of your conversation with him, and I am so in sync with what he believes and what he feels and the direction that we are heading. And I am paying very, very close attention to the Asia Pacific theater, and have been for the last, 30 days, 30 years, I should say, but the last 30 days, and particularly in these last 72 hours. And I am very, very concerned that we are going to see some coming to blows here. We're at a place right now in the Pacific. Never mind Europe. Never mind what we're facing over in Europe as well. But we're in a place right now in the Pacific where there at any moment we could see an outbreak of war between Taiwan and China, which would then draw in many, many other nations into that fight. And it's something that I'm not sure that we're prepared to withstand right now. Very serious.
Yeah. Well, there has been so much has happened since we last visited with you. The raid on President Trump's Mar-a-Lago home,
right.
Unprecedented. I had on former Deputy Assistant Director of the Counterterrorism Division of the FBI, Terry Turchi. I had on retired FBI agent David Baldwin. I had on retired FBI agent Brian Shepard. All of them were aghast at what happened. Unprecedented, unnecessary to happen in this manner. And now we're hearing the drumbeat by the liberal press of the indictment watch. The indictment watch. I mean, they can't contain themselves, waiting to see if President Trump will be indicted and they can see him perp walk. Then, of course, there is the talk of conservatives and how patriots will respond. Can you read, and how they, I think, are gaslighting them? Can you speak to all of this, please?
There is so much, and I believe that I've been working on a document called A Citizen's Guide to Fifth Generation Warfare, and everything that we are seeing right now, and Trevor just touched on, in the last few seconds, and I didn't catch the previous hour of him because he's such a fascinating guy, but this idea of a war of narratives and a war of distractions in order to accomplish their overall and overarching goal that they are trying to achieve, which is really to take the United States of America to its knees and any particular way that they can. And they use these various objectives that they attack. And one of them that continues to be one of their objectives is obviously President Donald J. Trump. So all the FBI, and particularly the retired FBI, but we're now seeing upwards of two dozen whistleblowers, which is an unprecedented number, out of the FBI itself, to the point where the Attorney General of the United States of America, Merrick Garland, has put out, apparently issued a memorandum inside of the Department of Justice, which has a lot of different organizations other than just the FBI. They've got the ATF and other elements and arms that do different things for the government, that's all supposed to fall under the rule of law. And he put out a memo that talks to basically shut your mouths, do not be talking to anybody outside of our organization, meaning if you think you're going to be a whistleblower, you better mind your P's and Q's, otherwise we're going to come hunting you down next. I mean, the threat from the Attorney General of the United States of America, I have not seen the memo, so I will say that I have not seen the memo, but I have seen it out there on social media. I just have been so darn busy today, but I was sent a couple of very scathing commentaries from people inside of the government already that have told me this is just completely outrageous for the Attorney General to stop the truth from getting out. Because they're really, you have to ask yourself, is there a cover up that they are trying to keep, hidden down here? And a lot of it has to do with this Joe Rogan interview of Mark Zuckerberg here over the last couple of days, which is incredibly, incredibly explosive. So
for those who don't maybe know, Mark Zuckerberg admitted to Joe Rogan that the FBI was working with him and Facebook to do what?
Yeah, and Facebook and Twitter. So you have to ask, you know, what other social media organizations, YouTube, Instagram. But basically, Mark Zuckerberg admitted, and he very sort of nonchalantly admitted it. I have been paying attention to Joe Rogan for a long time, and I think Joe gave Zuckerberg a bit of a pass because he should have drilled into him when he started to admit to what he admitted to. But what Mark Zuckerberg admitted to was that the FBI came to Facebook in the summer of 2020, prior to the 2020 election, and basically told Zuckerberg and told Facebook to treat the Hunter Biden laptop story as disinformation, as Russian disinformation. And he admitted that. He admitted that just this past weekend. So now you have to start asking the questions, because one of the other pieces that we found out was, and we've learned subsequently, is, you know, so what was the communications like? And Zuckerberg said, well, I don't have anything written. I didn't have any, you know, there's no notes or anything like that. Well, wait a second. So that begs 50 other questions. So there's so many things that now have to be investigated, because this, you know, obviously occurred because Zuckerberg, the owner of Facebook and the owner of, you know, Meta, has admitted to this happening in the summer of 2020. If the FBI came and told him to treat this as Russian disinformation and to basically do whatever you need to do to squash this information from getting out and treat it as such, that allowed so many other actions to occur, one of which was our 54, you know, former CIA directors and secretaries of defense, intelligence officials in October of 2020 to come out prior to the election to basically say that everything that dealing with Hunter Biden's laptop was all Russian disinformation. So what means is that this absolutely affected the outcome of the election. This caused the election to have a different outcome with a whole bunch of people, never mind all the fraudulent behavior and activities we have found in the machines and in mail-in ballots. This alone is such a statement of frankly sedition by the FBI and by elements in the Department of Justice to have allowed this. That's why we now have Senator Grassley and Senator Johnson representing two different investigative bodies, one the Senate Judiciary Committee and one a Senate Investigation Committee that they have, that they look at corruption in government. So those two separate committees have now sent letters over to the Department of Justice and sent letters over to the FBI, particularly Director Wray and AG Garland, basically telling them, look, number one, you're going to have to hold all information that you have from these communications with Facebook and all other social media organizations that you spoke to in 2020, because I guarantee they didn't just speak to Facebook. They also spoke to Twitter, and they spoke to other owners of other partnered, what I would call now partnered social media outlets. And remember, at Twitter, the former lead attorney for the FBI who worked directly for Jim Comey is now the attorney for Twitter. So the insider knowledge of what is happening inside of these social media companies, and then now what we know happened in the summer of 2020, it's like Donald Trump said in a statement he made yesterday, I believe, hey, we either got to throw the election out and run a new election, and we need to do that like right away, or the people in currently occupying the White House need to step down, because this 2020 election was so egregiously disrupted and corrupted, and it was, and we now know the FBI played a major role in that by going to the at least Facebook. We now need to find out about Twitter and getting these organizations to usurp what the reality was about the Hunter Biden investigation. It was not about Russian disinformation. It was actually about corrupt behavior by Hunter Biden and other elements of the Biden family, particularly Joe Biden's brother. And we know there's been a lot of information that have come out about the big guy. So there's so much at stake. And so I don't want to harp on this too much, because I want to jump to some other critical things that are tied to this, you know, because you asked me about Mar-a-Lago. Mar-a-Lago is just Mar-a-Lago is another distraction. It is another narrative that the left and this White House can carry, so that we're not looking. So we're paying attention to that noise. The mainstream media can push that out, and they can talk about that all night long, and they can bash, you know, the American people over the head with it. They can bash all of us deplorables, all of us now, what Biden calls us fascists, right? I mean, this is insane. So they can bash us all while they're doing other things. And what are the other things that they're doing? The World Economic Forum, under the leadership of Klaus Schwab, and this is evil leadership.
Yes.
They are now fully, I mean, they are now in at high gear. They are now at high speed in terms of the efforts that they are going to, that they have been taking and that they are going to take. You watch. And I want your audience to go back and read. It was put out in March of this year, Executive Order 14067. Executive Order 14067. It has to do with the financial system of the United States of America.
Central bank,
which means
central bank dollar, central bank digital currency.
Digital currency. And on the, I think it's the 13th of December of this year, the 13th of this December of this year is when this thing goes into effect. And for a period of time from March until then, there have been a whole series of steps that all of the government agencies and activities, and frankly, you know, typically the legislative branch doesn't